The first call of the afternoon, at 3:10, came when Chap was washing windows. Wes was still in Trevor's office, grilling him with one question after another. Trevor was weary. He'd missed his nap, and he desperately needed a drink.
"Law office," Chap answered.
"Is this Trevor's office?"
the caller asked.
"It is. Who's calling?"
"Who are you?"
"I'm Chap, the new paralegal."
"What happened to the girl?"
"She no longer works here. What can I do for you?"
"This is Joe Roy Spicer. I'm a client of Trevor's, and I'm calling from Trumbull."
"Calling from where?"
"Trumbull. It's a federal prison. Is Trevor there?"
"No, sir. He's in Washington, and he should be back here in a couple of hours."
"Okay. Tell him I'll call back at 5.
"Yes, sir."
Chap hung up and took a deep breath, as did Klockner across the street. The CIA had just had its first live contact with one of the Brethren. The second call came at exactly 5. Chap answered the phone and recognized the voice. Trevor was waiting in his office.
"Hello?
Trevor, this is Joe Roy Spicer."
"Hello, Judge."
"What'd you find in Washington?"
"We're still working on it. It's going to be a tough one, but we'll find him."
There was a long pause, as if Spicer didn't like this news and was uncertain about how much to say.
"Are you coming tomorrow?"
I'll be there at 3.
"Bring $5,000 cash."
$5,000?
"That's what I said. Get the money and bring it here. All in 20s and 50s.
"What are you going to do?"
"Don't ask stupid questions, Trevor. Bring the damn money. Put it in an envelope with the other mail. You've done it before."
"All right."
Spicer hung up without another word. Then Trevor spent an hour discussing the economics of Trumbull. Cash was prohibited. Every inmate had a job, and his wages were credited to his account. Expenditures, such as long-distance calls, commissary charges, copying expenses, stamps, were all debited against his account. But cash was present, though seldom seen. It was smuggled in and hidden, and it was used to pay gambling debts and bribe guards for small favors. Trevor was afraid of it. If he, as the attorney, got caught sneaking it in, his visiting privileges would be permanently eliminated. He'd smuggled on 2 previous occasions, both times $500 in 10s and 20s. He couldn't imagine what they wanted with $5,000. Chapter 28. After 3 days of stepping over and around Wes and Chap, Trevor needed a break. They wanted breakfast, lunch, and dinner together. They wanted to drive him home and pick him up for work very early in the morning. They were running what was left of his practice. Chap the paralegal, Wes the office manager. Both of them drilling him with endless questions because there was precious little lawyering left to be done. So it was no surprise when they announced they would drive him to Trumbull. He didn't need a driver, he explained. He'd made the trip many times in his trusty little Beetle, and he'd go it alone. This upset them, and they threatened to call their client for guidance.
"Call the damn client for all I care,"
Trevor yelled at them, and they backed down.
"Your client is not running my life."
But the client was, and they all knew it. Only the money mattered now. Trevor had already performed his Judas act. He left Neptune Beach in his Beetle alone, followed by Wes and Chap in their rental car, and behind them was a white van occupied by people Trevor would never see. Nor did he want to see them. Just for the hell of it, he made a sudden turn into a convenience store for a 6-pack, and laughed when the rest of the caravan slammed on brakes and barely avoided a wreck. Once out of town, he drove painfully slow, sipping his beer, savoring his privacy, telling himself he could suffer through the next 30 days. He could suffer through anything for $1 million. As he neared the village of Trumbull, he had the first pangs of guilt. Could he pull this off?
He was about to face Spicer, a client who trusted him, a prisoner who needed him, a partner in crime. Could he keep a straight face and act as if things were fine while every word was being captured by a high-frequency mic in his briefcase? Could he swap letters with Spicer as if nothing had changed, knowing that the mail was being monitored? Plus, he was throwing away his law career, something he'd worked hard to attain and had once been proud of. He was selling his ethics, his standards, even his morals for money. Was his soul worth $1 million? Too late now. The money was in the bank. He took a sip of beer and washed away the fading twinges of guilt.